So we're going to begin the sermon today in John chapter 13, verse 1. John chapter 13, verse 1. And John chapter 13 is a familiar chapter to us as we come up upon the days of the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. So we're going to look at this element of that particular time period that's laid out for us in John chapter 13. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all these things into his hand, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Then he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, 'Lord, are you washing my feet?' Jesus answered him and said to him, 'What I am doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this.' Peter said to him, 'You shall never wash my feet.' And Jesus answered him, 'If I do not wash your feet, you have no part with me.' Simon Peter said to him, 'Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head.' Jesus said to him, 'Have he who is bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not all of you. For he knew who would betray him. Therefore he said, You are not all clean. So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments and sat down again, he said to them, 'Do you not know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. And if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them.'" So as you read this, what's this all about? What's this all about? As I think back, coming into the church, I learned that there are various Christian groups that practice the foot washing. I did not attend one of those groups when I went to church. I didn't know anything about the foot washing. I had never read this particular passage, didn't know it was in there. But coming into the church, I found out that this was something that the church practices following the instruction that's clearly given to us in the scriptures. As you look at the Roman Catholic practices, this is practiced among the eldership among the Roman Catholics. And there is some question there about whether this is something that should be practiced with the laity or just the ministry. So it's not a clear-cut thing with them. Some do it among the whole congregation. They all have the foot washing. A lot of times this is done in association with communion or the Lord's Supper. Many people do this every week. And you also have, then they have special times that they do it around Easter or Holy Week. A lot of times this is part of Holy Thursday. How many of you know what Holy Thursday is? Well, obviously you're probably Catholic, but anyway, Holy Thursday. In fact, they call this Maundy Thursday. And I've seen Maundy Thursday, M-A-U-N-D-A-Y. So what does that mean? First of all, they do this because they believe that Jesus Christ was crucified on Friday, that is Good Friday, and so the night before, this was Thursday night in their view, so that makes that Holy Thursday called Holy Thursday because they are remembering the Last Supper. And it's called Maundy Thursday because the Maundy is the foot washing. That M-A-U-N-D-Y, Monday, most likely comes from the word mandatum, the command. And that command, on the night of the Passover, Christ said that he also gave a new commandment, and that you love one another as I have loved you. And as you look at the foot washing and those things, the two tie together. The mandate was to do the foot washing, and as you look at John chapter 13, verse 14, it says, if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. So Christ is commanding that his followers would keep the foot washing. As we begin to examine the foot washing, we have to recognize that it is a mandate, a command given to us by Jesus Christ. It tells us clearly in that passage in John 13, happy are you if you do the foot washing. It's something that as we understand it, we happily and gladly participate in that carrying out that instruction. As you think about the foot washing, there's a great deal of meaning for this ordinance established on the night of that Jesus established the New Testament symbols. The bread and the wine and the foot washing, they all go together. Now, what does the foot washing ceremony picture? Well, we're going to talk about some of that today, and next week we'll talk about it again and cover the subject thoroughly. And the title of the sermon is The Meaning of the Foot Washing. The Meaning of the Foot Washing. And in fact, there are seven meanings of the foot washing, some of which you probably will recognize and some of them you may not recognize. So let's begin with the first point, and this is going to be a point sermon. I don't always give a point sermon, but today it will be. Point one is, as far as the meaning of the Passover, it represents humility and loving service to others. Humility and loving service to others. And so we're going to go through a couple of main points today, and there will be some sub-points under each of the main points. So this is something that we've commonly said, and no doubt about it, that it is we're recognizing Christ's service to us, and it's a reminder that we are to be of service to others. The first sub-point under this subject, humility and loving service, is hospitality. Hospitality. In ancient Israel, as people traveled, their feet became tired and dirty, and because they had sandals that they wore, and as a result of that their feet would get dirty. And the washing of feet offered hospitality and refreshment to travelers. For example, you would come in and after traveling, and the people that are at that home would allow you the opportunity to wash your feet, and the host would offer you water, and you could use that water to wash your feet. The host didn't necessarily wash your feet or have a servant do it, but they did offer you water to do that. You look at Genesis chapter 18. It talks about Christ and the two angels, and what do we find there? It says in Genesis 18, verse 3, it says, my Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. So, here come the two angels and the one we know as Jesus Christ, and Abraham offers them water in order to wash their feet. In Genesis chapter 19, it speaks about Lot and the two angels that came into Sodom, and Lot offered the two angels the opportunity to wash their feet. He speaks about that in Genesis chapter 19, verse 1. Lot offers the angels to stay in his house, and he offers them the opportunity to wash their feet. And then he says, you can wash your feet, rest for the night, and then be on your way. So hospitality was an important part of the culture in the Middle East, and in fact, it still is. Hospitality is just something that is taught in that particular culture. In Genesis chapter 24, verse 32, it speaks there about a man who came to the house and unloaded the camels, provided straw. This is when Ebenezer went to his to find a wife for Isaac, and he went to the house, and so they gave him water to wash his feet and those who were with him, and he also was carrying out an errand, and he carried that out. Judges chapter 19, verse 21, it says, so he brought him into his house and gave fodder to the donkeys, and they washed their feet and ate and drank. That's in Judges 19, verse 21. This is also mentioned in the New Testament, where Christ brings up the lack of hospitality in one household. Instead of providing him with the water to wash his feet, he points out, he even offered that basic bit of hospitality. In Luke chapter 7, verse 38, it says, and he stood at his, and is talking about the woman who washed Christ's feet with and he said she washed his feet, and she was weeping. And it says, and she began to wash his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet and anointed them with fragrant oil. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw him, he spoke to himself, saying, this man, if he were a prophet, would recognize that this woman is a sinner. And if he recognized that, he wouldn't allow her to touch him. Luke 7, verse 40. And Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. So he said, teacher, say it. And there was a certain creditor who had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and another 50. And when they had nothing with which to repay, he freely forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him the more? And Simon answered and said, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. And he said to him, you have rightly judged. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered into your house. You gave me no water for my feet. You didn't provide for me a guest in your house, which he should have done. But she washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair of her head. You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Then he said to her, your sins are forgiven. So this is an example that Christ leaves for us of washing of feet and the significance there with the woman who washed his feet with her tears and her hair and anointed his feet. First Timothy chapter 5, verse 9 mentions the foot washing in a way, not directly, but it speaks of somebody who would be considered a widow indeed. It says, beginning in 1 Timothy chapter 5, 9, let's read that in order to set the context for what it says in verse 10. It says, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. So he's speaking about a woman who qualifies as a widow indeed. And the point is showing hospitality. And the point for all of us is we should help others as they are in need. And other scriptures in the New Testament point to this clearly. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. Let's look at Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. And there it says, bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. So we as Christians are to do what we can when it is in our power to do so to help the other members of the church and those in need. So if a need comes our way, then we should be willing to help them. And our willingness to go through the foot washing is symbolic of our recommitment to that particular path, to be of service to others, to be hospitable, to be thoughtful. And going on in Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, it continues this theme. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, it says, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. So we are called upon to take care of everybody in the world. But we are to particularly care for our brethren in God's church. So that's just the way that we are to be as members of the church. As we understand what the foot washing is all about, make our recommitment to that, and then as the year goes on and we have the opportunity to help those who would be in need. Now the next sub-point under the first point, which is humility and loving service to others, is lowliness of mind. Lowliness of mind, the second sub-point. We are not to be exalted in our own minds. We are to be humble. We are to humble ourselves in lowliness of mind, and that's part of what the foot washing represents. We've often heard that the washing of feet was the job of a slave. And when Jesus took off his outer garments and girded himself with a towel to wash his disciples' feet, that was the role of a slave. We've also heard that a servant would normally be provided to wash guest feet, and that wasn't always the case. You know, if you were a Jew or a Hebrew slave, you would not be given that menial task of washing somebody's feet. You had other duties and responsibilities. But if you did have a slave who was a Gentile, they would be the ones who would wash your feet. And so it's speaking, that's just the way it was in the time of Christ. For Jesus to do what he did, you know, you think about what took place there in John chapter 13. So they're there at the Passover, and Christ takes off his garments, and he gets some water and in a basin, and he's got a towel wrapped around his waist, and he begins this process of washing his disciples' feet. Now, what he was, as you looked at the context, he was the rabbi, and they were the disciples. He was the teacher, they were the disciples. And in that culture, rabbis never did this. Teachers never did this. This was completely astounding to the 12 as they're sitting there watching this unfold. They're like, what in the world are you doing? They didn't expect this at all. This was so different from their culture and didn't fit with their culture. So he was willing to humble himself in that way to set them an example. And Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 helps to emphasize this point. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. There it says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Jesus said, we must be abased in order to be exalted. We must be abased in order to be exalted. And as you look at Christ's earlier example with John the Baptist, he came to John the Baptist as he was beginning his ministry, and he came to have John baptize him. Well, John was astounded by this because he knew who Jesus was. And so he said, hold on, you want me to wash your feet? You want me to wash your, you don't want, you, I should be washing your feet. You know, you ask him about baptism and, not washing his feet, but baptism. And he said, I shouldn't be baptizing you. You should be baptizing me. But Christ recognized the importance of his example. And as John the Baptist said, that he was not even qualified to unloosen his sandals. He recognized who Christ was. So we are to be humble. That's what this is all about. So as you go through the foot washing, you know, we're to do so in humility and to recognize this was the example that Jesus Christ set. And we're to be like Jesus Christ and recommit ourselves to being of service to others. The next subpoint, which would be C, under humility and loving service to others, is servant leadership. Servant leadership. So, and this is ties in with Luke chapter 22, verse 24. Luke chapter 22, verse 24. And this is an interesting example that unfortunately took place among the disciples, but it recognizes what we're like as human beings. Luke 22, verse 24. There it says, now there was also a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. Well, that's a very human approach to things. I'm the greatest. No, you're the greatest. We're all contending for that humanly. That's how it is often done. So they had this contention going on, and Christ noticed it. Verse 25, and he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But not so among you. That's not the way you're to be. That's not the way you're to be. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. This is the approach that we're to take. One of service, one of giving, one of thinking of other people, and being a servant in our leadership. For who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Well, the answer to that question is, from a human point of view, who's greater? He who sits at the table and is served by the servant. And what does Christ go on to say? He says, I am among you as one who serves. I'm the one serving you. And in verse 28, he says, but you are those who have continued with me in my trials, and I bestow upon you a kingdom, just as my Father bestowed one upon me, that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes. That's what their potential was. But Christ wanted them to learn to be servants, to learn to have that mindset that Jesus Christ had of being a servant and not having people wait on him. As you think about what takes place in Luke chapter 22, I prefer to think of this as happening before the Passover. So here are the disciples arguing about who's the greatest, and then we have the Passover and the lesson. Christ set the example for them, washing their feet and doing something that was very surprising to them as an example to them. And it may very well be that their attitude and their lack of humility on display was what precipitated the foot washing. So Christ's point is that when the disciples are on their thrones in the kingdom, they are to be as Christ, one who serves to be servants of other people. That's what we're to be. Is there any job that we wouldn't do or shouldn't do because we are Christians or we're in this exalted position that we think we should be willing to serve, to do whatever needs to be done in order to help things to move along and move along in a positive direction? As you look at, go on to another example that we see in the scriptures, it talks about Zebedee's sons. John and the two boys there, they're talking to their mother, and they're talking to her, and he said to her, "What do you wish?" He's speaking to John's mother, and she said to him, "Grant that these my two sons, may sit on your right hand and on your left in your kingdom." So she wants an exalted position for them, and Christ said, I can't give you that. That's not mine to give. But he does ask her, "You know what? You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" And they said to him, we're able. So in their minds, they were ready, willing, and able. And we know that that wasn't the case at all. As the Christ's death took place, his arrest and death, they weren't ready to go down that path. They said they were. They thought they were. Verse 23 says, "So he said to them, 'You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared by my Father.'" It's not mine to give. It's the Father's decision. And so he explains this to them, and he tells them, "You're going to drink my cup." And they did go on to drink of his cup because all of them died by martyrdom. They all died, all of the apostles. Verse 24, "And when the 10 heard it, they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and said, 'You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many.' So we are called to become small in our own eyes. To become small in our own eyes, and that's what makes us great in God's sight. And that's what God is seeking to develop in us in order that we can be a part of his team who will be ruling with Jesus Christ in the world to come. The next subpoint, D, under humility and loving service to others, is forgiving one another. Forgiving one another. Getting down and washing one another's feet helps us to break out of pride, to recognize how small we really are, and the foot washing helps us to come together, and it lifts others to our level just as Christ did with the washing of the disciples' feet. And you know, it's interesting as I look at the church over the years, all of the different conflicts and offenses and things that go on one year after another. They're not cleared up at the Passover, but they go on year after year after year after year. And God said, "No, that's not what's supposed to be happening. You're supposed to be forgiving and to allow that particular offense to pass away. You've forgiven them. You've let it go. And you've left the matter in God's hands, and he's going to take care of it. So if there's something that they need to answer for, be assured there will come a day when they will. But it's not your business to worry about that. But it's easy for us humanly to be offended or hurt in some way and then carry that on one year after another. And God said, that's not the way it's to be. When you get down on your knees and you are washing someone's feet, you are to be in an attitude of forgiveness, to let that sin go, to no longer hold a grudge, to let it go and to move on. So when you look at that person, you no longer see an enemy or somebody that's offended you. You see another Christian, and you're praying for them and want the best for them. The next sub-point is E, and it goes this way under this humility and loving service to others. When we are honoring all without partiality, it can be anyone, not just our favorites. You know, so as we wash feet, you know, we can say, well, I'm not washing that guy's feet nor him either. I don't like either one of them. And you know what? That doesn't fit with what's taking place there at all. And you know, I've you think, well, you'd never see that at the Passover. Oh yes, I've seen it, because I there are conflicts. And I remember in one church area, you had different rooms in which you would do the foot washing. So I remember just looking at a guy and seeing him come in and sees where somebody went, and there was another room. So guess which room he went into, because he didn't even want the chance of washing this person's feet. But if that's your approach, something's missing. You don't see the bigger picture. And so what? You look at Jesus Christ and his example. He washed the feet of Judas Iscariot, the one who would betray him. He knew he would betray him, and he still washed his feet. So that's the example. That's the example we want to follow, is to be forgiving. The next, we don't just wash our favorites' feet, but we wash whoever comes up. And it's a random thing. You know, when you, if you're in here or you go out with the men, whoever comes your way, you wash their feet. You wash their feet. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 21. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 21. And it's the general approach that we want to have toward each other, the approach that is described in 1 Corinthians 12. And it says here, "And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you." And think about that if you're making choices about whose feet you will wash. I have no need of you. I don't think we want to make that decision. "I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet. I have no need of you. No, much rather, those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor, and our presentable parts have greater modesty." And we are members of the body. Members of the body of Christ, and before we come to the foot washing and the Passover, we are to discern the Lord's body. And if somebody is in the body, who are we to judge them? Who are we to hold a grudge against them? And as we are washing feet, guess what you are? You and I, we are extensions of Christ. We are his hands and feet that is supposed to be doing and helping. That's the picture that is being on display when we go through the foot washing process. We are serving the Father and Christ because we are serving the members of Christ. And whoever needs service, we are to be of service to them. As you look at Matthew chapter 25, we're not going to read it, but we're familiar with it. And what do we see there? We see that people are rewarded because they were helping people. Somebody needs a drink of water, something small. So what? They need your help, and we offer them help. And as Christ said, "He who has done it to the least of my brethren has done it to me." And that's the approach that we're to take. John chapter 13, verse 20. I'll just read the scripture. It says, "He who receives whomever I send receives me. For he who receives him who receives him who sent me, he who receives him who sent me," that is the Father. So God has sent us all, and we are to receive one another. You know, it's an approach that we take to one another. that's crucial to the success of the church. And before the Passover, we are going to go through and look at the Corinthians as far as the Passover is concerned. It's pretty interesting what took place at that Passover. It's not a good example, but it's something that we need to take into consideration as we take the Passover and look at our approach to one another. The next sub-point is F, and we are following Christ's example of loving service. And that's the model. That is the approach that we are to take. Christ took that approach, and we are to do the same thing. We are to approach each other as following Christ's example. You look at Philippians 2. It beautifully expounds that principle of being a loving servant. And you know, it's interesting, as you go back in the history of the United Church of God, there was a project that was undertaken that was to promote servant leadership. We are to lead, but we are to lead as servants. Interestingly, a lot of effort and time and discussion took place on that, but when it came to implement it, it never happened, because a certain element didn't want to pursue that. They wanted to be the big wheels. They did not want to be servants. Sorry, something's missing there when you look at what the Passover is all about and the foot washing. So we are to, just like Jesus Christ, be servants. And Christ was the perfect servant who humbled himself and was willing to serve all, even somebody who was bent on his destruction, Judas Iscariot. So Christ laid down his life, and that's the approach that we're to take as well. And as he says in John chapter 13, we are to love one another. We are to love one another just as Christ loved us. And think about you in your life. Why do you deserve to be loved by Christ? Why do I deserve to be loved by Christ? Are any of us perfect? I don't think so. We fall short of God's glory, but God still loves us. And God is still willing to apply the blood of Jesus Christ to us as we sin. He doesn't want us to be sinning, but he's willing to do that in order that we can be restored to a relationship with him. So as we think about our brethren, then we want to follow the same pattern. And even our enemies, you know, to pray for them and be willing to serve them. You see, that's not the attitude that the world has. That's why the world right now is never going to change, because that attitude does not exist in most people in power. But that's the approach that we're to learn and to apply. And as we go to the Passover and the foot washing, it's a reminder that we're given of what we're all about. So we want to come before God and offer him our service and service to others. The second point here, not a sub-point, but a main point, is this. Being cleansed from our walk in this world is what we do as we go through the Passover, because part of it is a washing of the feet, isn't it? There's a washing that takes place. And as we go through everyday life, we are just like people walking on the roads of Judea would have get their feet dirty. The same thing happens to us as we walk through this world. Our feet become dirty. So it's important that we go through this process of being cleansed from our walk in this world. You look at John chapter 13, verse 8. We've read this, but just to read it again. Peter said to Christ, as Christ was going to wash his feet, he said, "You shall never wash my feet." And Christ said, "Sorry, if I don't wash your feet, then you have no part with me." So do you think that that doesn't apply to you and me? It most certainly does. And in verse 9 of John 13, Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only. So once Christ told him, look, this is the only way it can be, then he goes all in, wash my not only my feet, but my whole body. And Christ said, you don't need that. You don't need to be washed completely. He says in John 13, verse 10, he who is bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you, because he was referring to Judas, who would betray him. He said, you are not all clean. The word bathe is a different word than wash. The word translated bathe has to do with completely taking a bath. But the word that's used here in what Christ is telling Peter is nipto, and means hand washing or a light washing, not being completely bathed. And so this is why we wash the feet. It's a cleansing that represents a cleansing that takes place as a result of our walk in the world. And this can't just be a physical thing, because it says in verse 10, it says, and you are clean, but not all of you, for he knew who would betray him. He said, you are not all clean. He knew who would betray him, and is talking about a spiritual uncleanness, talking about a wrong mindset and sin. And in Jewish practice of the time, men would wash the hands and the face before a meal. And I believe this passage has to do with the fact that God's people, their sins are washed away at baptism. We are cleansed at baptism. But beyond that cleansing at baptism, we continue on the road of life, and we need our feet washed, not all of us, but our feet washed as a reminder that we still have things that need to be cleansed. And we go through that process at the foot washing. So being cleansed from our walk in this world, God's way of life is described, or let's go back up here a second. This point is being cleansed from our walk in the world is God's way of life is described as a walk through the Bible. It's described as a walk. For instance, you find that in throughout the Bible that it describes God's way of life as a walk. For instance, Enoch walked with God, it tells us in Genesis. You find that Abraham was to walk before God and be blameless. You find that Israel was told, you shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you. And you look at Micah. He says in chapter 6, verse 8, walk humbly with God. And so these are all points that remind us that we're all involved in a walk. And then a subpoint under this is about ritual cleansing. Baptism is a ritual cleansing in itself. And the ritual cleansings done in the Old Testament were done with blood, water, and with fire, as you see that take place when with the ordination of Aaron and his sons as priests. They put a dab of blood on Aaron's ear, representing hearing. The on the right hand, representing actions, and on the big toe of the right foot, talking about walk, and sprinkling blood on the altar. That's how they were cleansed. And it also talks about the fact that they were to be clean as they went about their duties in the temple. And we look at Exodus chapter 40, verse 17. Exodus 30, verse 17. Exodus chapter 30, verse 17. It says, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, you shall also make a laver, that is a wash basin, of bronze, and with its base also of bronze for washing, you shall put it between the tabernacle of meeting and the altar. And you shall put water in it, for Aaron and his sons shall wash their hands and their feet in water from it. And when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, you shall come near the altar to minister to burn an offering made by fire to the Lord. They shall wash with water lest they die. So they shall wash their hands and their feet, lest they die. And it shall be a statute forever to them, to him and his descendants throughout their generations. So this was what God wanted. He wanted them to go through this process of washing, and it was something that was very much a part of God's way of life and still is, and doing the foot washing and all of that as part of the Passover is all part of that. So let's look at one concluding point here. John chapter 11, verse 55. John chapter 11, verse 55. There it says, "And the Passover of the Jews was near, and many went from the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves." So they went through a purification process before they went through the Passover. So people would go through ritual washings, and they would be purified. And we see something that happened in John chapter 18. The Jews of Judea were keeping the Passover one day late, at the beginning of the 15th. John chapter 18, verse 28 tells us this. John chapter 18, verse 28. It says, "Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover." So they wouldn't go in to the praetorium, which was where the Roman soldiers, that was part of where Pilate and the soldiers, they were all part of that, and they were considered unclean. And then it says, and interestingly, this is taking place after Christ kept the Passover. So Christ has kept the Passover, and clearly it's before the Jews took the Passover. They did not want to be defiled by entering the Gentile area. The whole idea of foot washing transcends the whole idea of Passover itself. It has to do with a way of life of washing one another's feet and caring for helping each other. And that is something that we are to participate in as we rededicate ourselves to our God and continue on the journey, the walk that God has called us to. So you might think about some of these things as you prepare for the Passover. And what's my attitude? What's my approach to being a Christian? What's my attitude and approach as I come to the Passover service and go through the foot washing? It's not just some physical thing that we go through. It's bigger than that. And God wants us to think about these things so that as we go through the process, we gain the full benefit of what God wants us to get out of it. God isn't just having us go through this for the fun of going through rituals. You know, my feet got washed and it was a little cool. The water was a little cool. That's not what it's about. It's something much more significant. So think about these things before we get to Passover time and we actually get there on that night and wash one another's feet and use it as a part of a rededication to God and service to all people of the earth. So thank you for your attention.